are listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
When the first department stores opened in the 1870s, they were described as a women's paradise because of their diverse offerings and their social environments. Today, with an increasing number of women joining the corporate, medical, and legal professions and bringing home more and more income, businesses are once again trying to refashion themselves as women's paradises. Paco Underhill, whose clients include Walmart, Trader Joe's, Verizon, and Estee Lauder, examines just how businesses are doing that in his new book, What Women Want, The Global Market Turns Female Friendly. It's published by Simon & Schuster, and I'm very pleased to welcome Paco Underhill to our show today. Hello.
Thank you for having me.
Now, what do you mean when you say female friendly? Are there places that are female unfriendly?
One of the issues that comes up in almost every assignment that we do, whether we're working on a new Adidas store in Beijing or a new Nokia store in Shanghai or a Citibank prototype in Singapore or across Europe, is this female friendly? And it may be an operational issue, meaning that how does the check-in process work at a hotel? Mm-hmm. It may be recognizing the difference between what makes a good dressing room and a bad dressing room. It may be looking at security issues in terms of how something is organized, or simply whether a store has what we call a plant chair at the opening, where the woman shopper can plant her two-legged dog.
Yes, the man who doesn't want to go looking through all the dresses. Well, I would assume that women shops that have focused on women, and we've seen a lot of them for a long, long time, would know all of this stuff and just be able to pass on the information to everyone else.
Leonard, we live in a retail world, which may be an extension of the broader world, that is owned by men, designed by men, managed by men, and yet we expect women to participate in it. I think some of the greatest travesties in the intergender conflicts are in places that probably should know better.
Well, you mentioned hotels, and you write that what women look for in their hotel experience is a good snapshot of what they care about in daily life. What do you mean by that?
If I'm checking in to the Marriott O'Hare and someone says, "Mr. Underhill, you're in room 417, it isn't a security breach. But if a woman is checking into a hotel by herself and somebody announces her name and her room number in a loud voice, that is a security breach. One of the reasons why in most hotel chains now, somebody hands you your key and generally a piece of cardboard that's folded over where your room number is.
And they do it for men as well as women.
They do it for men as well as women. But the protocol has been changed in part because women have demanded it.
What about bellhops? You write that she's often put off by them. Why?
Well, for you and I, we aren't creeped out by having some guy grab our bags and escort us to our room. And we stand there in that room with the bellhop. Doesn't matter to us, but it does matter to her.
There's always that tipping moment as well.
It's not just a tipping moment, but it's just the chance of security breach.
Mm-hmm. Although we would assume that hotels have already checked those people out. It's like bonding somebody who handles money. Wouldn't that be the case?
You would certainly think that's true, but let's recognize that security is both a real issue, but it's also a perceptual issue, just in the way that time is a real issue, but it's also a perceptual issue.
You also say there's a difference between a hotel being cool and a hotel being comfortable. Women prefer which?
Well, I think this is governed by both gender. It's also governed by age. I am 58. I am a little more creaky at this point in my life than I was 25 years ago. So sitting down on a bench that looks cool but is only 18 inches off the ground may be eminently comfortable if you're 25. It may not be so comfortable if you're 58. It may also not be so comfortable if you're wearing a dress as opposed to a pair of pants.
Mm. Well, the whole business of comfortable and hip was pretty much the basis of half of the plots of Sex and the City. Those young women all wanted to be in the hippest place, and there are restaurants that pretty much cater to people who want to be hip, and food is not the most important thing. Are they going after women or men?
Well, please don't talk to me about Sex and the City, because I live five doors down from where Carrie lived in the program, which has been a miserable experience for all of us on the block, because that block, I'm told, gets 250,000 more visitors than the block immediately north or south of us.
So you have to tell me something important. When you leave your house, do you just stick your arm out and yell taxi and a taxi comes as a different carry?
Well, there are certainly any number of taxis that often are driving down the street, dropping off tourists who want to see those famous steps where Carrie stepped out on him.
But in the end, can't we just simply say that older people prefer comfortable to cool, whether they're male or female?
I think that's probably true. But in catering to the comfortable here, we generally end up taking care of everyone. And certainly for those of us who have crossed over the 40th age barrier here, I am picking my restaurants probably as much on noise as I do about hipness or whatever.
I think food should be an issue, but a really noisy restaurant with good food is a place that I won't go back to.
I'm in your camp, Leonard.
My guest is Paco Underhill, whose latest book is What Women Want, The Global Market Turns Female Friendly. Previous book was Why We Buy, The Science of Shopping. Well, in this case, they're interrelated, aren't they?
Certainly.
For example, you say that there was at one point, stores were thinking that unisex would appeal to women as well as men. That didn't work out?
It didn't work out. One of the reasons why is the issues of what we call the tender gender here, which is if you walk into a woman's closet, there are probably articles of apparel that were sold for men that are a very comfortable part of her repertoire. There's a blue jean jacket, might be a pair of jeans, could be a shirt. If I walked into your closet, I'm guessing that there's probably nothing in your closet that was designed for a female that's gotten into your repertoire, unless I've read you completely wrong.
I keep those hidden away in the drawers.
This is true whether we're talking about a unisex store, a unisex dressing room.
Yeah, so you would think that unisex would appeal to women because so many women are wearing pants these days and wearing men's shirts.
It is interesting as a testing agent for prototype stores. I can remember working on a sports shoe store in Moscow, and you can look at the man who is going across the shoe wall. And all of a sudden, he realizes that he's in the women's section as opposed to the men's section. There's this moment of little startled reaction as he scampers back over to the right side of the fence.
He probably took longer to notice than a woman would have if she had been looking at men's sneakers.
Women seemed much less threatened by that identification.
Are there subtle differences in perceptions? For example, if I step into one of those women-friendly hotels, would I, a relatively insensitive male, notice the differences?
Probably not.
But a woman would notice it right away.
A woman picks up on that stuff. They pick up on the issues of clean, for example.
Going to the bathroom.
You know, it is a little creepy when you start to think about that bed in the hotel has been slept in by 364 other strangers, you know, since in the past year as you put your head, you put your head down on it. We sort of like to assume that nobody's ever been in that room ever before.
Or at least that the sheets are clean.
Well, we assume that the sheets are clean. probably what I'm told is one of the filthiest parts of a hotel room is the cover on the bed, because that is not changed or cleaned regularly. My female business colleagues tell me that that's the first thing that they fold up and stick in a corner.
What about places that we just assume are more male-oriented, like Home Depot, for example, or stores that are selling technology like Best Buy?
You know, have you watched TV recently, Leonard? And have you watched the Tool Belt Diva shows here? And one of the things that's quite extraordinary is that women are driving a $50 billion home improvement business. And it isn't just refinishing furniture. They have the courage now to take down walls. They watched it on TV. They've watched attractive women do increasingly complex projects and are taking it on themselves. And, of course, we recognize that in the world of technology, women have the power to turn a technology into an appliance.
Okay, so Circuit City goes under. Comp USA goes under, and Best Buy does not. Is that because the stores were run better or because they were doing certain things to accommodate the female customers or not doing them?
Okay. Both Circuit City and Comp USA were clients of ours more than 15 years ago as they tried to turn their operating culture around. Circuit City had a compensation arrangement where many of its associates were paid on commission rather than straight salary. And one of the problems became inside the store is the competition between the associates to build their commission as opposed to being customer-focused and friendly. One of the things we admire about Best Buy is that they have done a very concerted effort to make the store more female-friendly. They recognize that women buy computers, they buy printers, they buy phones, and they're buying them with a different set of criteria than your tech geek might walking in the door.
So they have to be able to talk two different languages?
They have to talk two languages.
Well, when I go into Best Buy, I usually find myself running around trying to find a salesperson to help me. Begging somebody to help me. Are they focusing on the women customers and ignoring me?
You know, there's an anecdote that I've been telling for more than 10 years that if two people walk into the printer aisle of a consumer electronics store, one male and one female, the person that you have to focus on is the female because she's there as a buyer. She's not visiting a temple of technology. She is visiting because she has to be there. Just in the same way, I might point out that if a man and a woman walk into a Victoria's Secret, the man probably doesn't want to be there, is there to buy a gift, probably can be upselled, wants it gift wrap, and would like to walk out the door with his gift in a brown paper bag. Thank you very much.
Paco Underhill is the founder and CEO of Enviracell Incorporated, with clients that include Target, Walmart, Verizon, Trader Joe's, Starbucks, Microsoft, McDonald's, Adidas, and Estee Lauder. He's a regular contributor to The Wall Street Journal, New York Times, and his most recent book is called What Women Want, The Global Market Turns Female Friendly. It's published by Simon & Schuster. We will continue our conversation after this. Later on in the show, Fred Plotkin shares some of his vast knowledge of the foods you'll find in Italy. And then this week's Please Explain is all about plants that you'd prefer not to meet up with, like poison ivy and poison oak. This is WNYC and WNYC.org. We're back with Paco Underhill. His latest book is What Women Want, The Global Market Turns Female Friendly. It's published by Simon & Schuster. We were talking about when a woman walks into a store, a technology store, that she may want something different than a man. How far does that go? For example, if a woman is buying a laptop, would she be more concerned about how much it weighs than whether it has a lot of memory?
She is less concerned generally about what happens underneath the hood, mm-hmm. okay, because she assumes that it works. What she is concerned about is how much it weighs, how it feels, and how it slips into her bag or not. Best Buy, for example, launched a new line of bags for laptops. The only problem was this: as they sold the bags, they didn't have a mirror because the woman wants to be able to slip it into the bag and see how she looks carrying it. Just in the same way that if you're selling somebody a mobile phone, for you and I, it may be a communication device, but particularly for a 25-year-old female, it's a fashion accessory.
Should the stores, well, they can't post signs that say this is a fashion accessory, but they can say this computer is the lightest. Would that be a way of appealing to women?
I think that's a very important criterion.
Mm-hmm. Of course, if they don't like the feel of a store, they do have more options today than they did in the past. You can go on the internet.
This is a very powerful issue because if you treat somebody well who's female, she gives you back loyalty. And if you treat her poorly, she tells her friends about it. And certainly that power of the net as it relates to the female consumer is particularly poignant in the automotive industry, where we note, having worked in dealerships, that it is much more likely that a female consumer walks in the door with a sheaf of paper where she's done her homework online, because she knows that generally the experience of being inside the dealer is truly miserable.
So you said that if a woman goes into a place like Best Buy, she's more likely to be in a buying mood than a male. What about a place like Home Depot where you almost can smell a testosterone?
That may have been true 20 years ago, and it may be true at 7 a.m. in the morning when the contractors are coming in. One of the challenges many merchant organizations have is how do they hold on to what their traditional franchise is and yet reach out to the to a customer base that they never realized was there before. Both Home Depot and Lowe's and the hardware store chains have made a concerted effort to make sure that the female walking in the door recognizes that she is a welcome visitor to those aisles.
There's also the fact that they carry a lot of plants in many of those stores, which makes them feel a little more friendly. They're almost gardening centers at the same time as they're places where you can get a new kitchen sink.
Well, it's not just gardening centers here, Leonard. It is, you know, textures and finishes and doors and all kinds of things that are part of the lexicon of the modern American home.
So you consult with a number of different businesses on how they can appeal to women in a better way. One of your clients is Estee Lauder. I would imagine they don't have anything to learn from you.
Please understand, I run a research and consulting firm. I have 140 employees across the world whose job it is to look at the interrelationship between people and products and people and spaces. So we work in lots of luxury goods settings. We have worked in the cosmetics and fragrance world for almost 20 years. And some of the very simple issues are, which isn't just about Estee Lauder, is that if someone approaches a cosmetic counter, if you greet them in the first minute, you actually have a negative impact on sales rather than letting them get engaged with a product.
Really? I would think that by greeting them, you're saying, you have a friend here. Anytime you want, you can talk to me.
Haven't you had the experience, Leonard, of being assaulted as soon as you step over the lease line,
yeah.
and that has a negative effect on you?
Same, just looking. In fact, I'm less likely to buy because
somebody has jumped on you.
Is that one of the more consistent errors you found in businesses?
Giving Goods Store is looking at the interrelationship between the physical design of the space, the way in which the merchandise is displayed, and the operating culture.
Well, okay, let's take a big box store. A big box store is meant to carry an awful lot of different things.
Mm-hmm.
Can you set it up so that it appeals to women and at the same time doesn't turn off men?
Certainly. For example here is, in general, a cosmetic section works better in a big box store if it's in the last third of the typical shopping trip, meaning the woman walks in and she's looking after her husband, she's looking after her kids, she's shopping for everybody else, and that as she's headed for the register, if she hits the cosmetic section, she's likely to go in to reward herself for having done what she's done.
Now, I don't know whether all Costco stores do that, but the one in Brooklyn does something like that. The first thing you see there is electronics. You don't see the groceries and other things until you've been there for quite a while. Is that a good strategy?
There is a concerted strategy at every store as to what goes where. Nothing is done by chance. Now, whether it's correct or not is often debatable, but nothing is placed randomly on the floor.
Now, you mentioned earlier that these places are owned by men, designed by men. Are they inviting women to come in and design?
What we note is that the profession of store planner, just like the profession of architect, is one of the last major design professions to get to some form of gender integration. If you think about it, can you name me an architect before the 20th century who was female?
No.
It's not that they weren't there, that they didn't do the work, but nobody recognizes them. Just as I
even
might...
now, there are only two or three who have world any real name recognition. Zaha Hadid. I can't think of too many others.
There is Ms. Maya Lin here also.
Oh, right.
Here,
mm-hmm.
But in general, the design profession has been a male bastion here. We can talk about how liberal arts and the artists are, and yet, again, we have that issue of gender integration there, probably trails the world of media and marketing.
My guest is Paco Underhill. His book, What Women Want, The Global Market Turns Female Friendly, published by Simon & Schuster. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. You write that SUVs were actually designed for women.
Of course.
That's surprising. I always thought that they were those big macho things, people saying, I'm the biggest guy on the block.
How many SUVs sold in America over the past 20 years actually were driven on a dirt road? Come on now.
Well, here. I haven't been on a dirt road for a long time, so I don't know.
Okay. What you note is that they were sold as safety vehicles. They made you feel secure. They gave you a better vantage point on the world. And yes, they were not meant to go, you know, traipsing around the Baja Desert. They were meant to get you to and from the soccer field and to and from the grocery store.
So driving a big car that won't be crushed if somebody else hits it. Would be something that would appeal to women?
Yes.
You also say that convenience stores and gas stations use the marketing term light, bright, and white.
The convenience store industry has worked very hard to be able to present itself as a female-friendly environment in the sense that you go to pump gas, the gas pumps are covered. They are generally well lit. They have recognized that bathrooms are an important part of their offering, and keeping those bathrooms clean is an important part of their compact with their customers. It isn't always perfect, and they get it wrong, but there's a concerted effort there to make it better.
Are architects of housing thinking about women's tastes? We've seen kitchens in different places than we did before, for example.
You know, it's kind of... It's interesting to look at the physical design of the home of 20 years ago versus the home today. the home Ted, the kitchen is generally the center of the universe. The refrigerator is the center of the kitchen because that's what everyone touches. It's a place where mom directs traffic. We recognize that in 2010, it takes two incomes to support a middle-class lifestyle, and that therefore the role of mom as multitasker is very much a part of our present life. She is bread earner, mother, wife, and I might point out in the throes of our recession, is much more likely to have kept her job than her husband. So the number of women who are the primary bread earners across America continues to increase.
So should we be designing kitchens for the husbands now, since in some cases they're the stay-at-home parent?
I think there's a reason why a number of men found creme brulee blow torches under the Christmas tree last year. And that was a male tool.
Are we seeing kitchens? In the old days, I know in apartments, you would walk into the house and there would be the kitchen. In houses, it would usually be fairly soon. It would be to the left or the right as you walked in.
They were often highly functional. There was no place to sit. It was as small as it could possibly be to fit in the appliances that it fit. Whereas in the modern home, the kitchens are huge.
Those creme brulee blowtorches for the men, well, on the other hand, aren't there toys for women like the Popeil rotisseries and these new smart ovens?
I think it's interesting that there are male menopause things like your Harley Davidson or your ATV, and their male toy are female toys that often fit into the context of the home, which may be the Ron Popeil, but it's also the renovated bathroom with a spa tub.
Is this happening in this country mostly? For example, if you go to a country like Mexico, people, middle-class people, are likely to have help.
True.
So they're I'm assuming they don't care as much about having all these little special doodads in the kitchen.
It is ironic to go to Brazil and Mexico, which are two of our major markets at Envirosil, and see the women reading the shelter magazines, looking at these kitchens and going, I have no place to hang.
Now, as you might have expected, we've had a number of listeners who have been writing in, leaving comments on our show page, taking issue with lumping women together as monolithic and making all of these large generalizations.
Leonard, I recognize that as I tackled this subject, I would be likely to be tarred and feathered on a number of occasions. Please recognize that this is a book that is trying to explain how the physical changes that we see in the world around us are linked to the changing status of women. As I talk with you, I have to make some broad general brush strokes, but I'm glad if someone's taken some objection to my remarks that maybe they might go out and buy the book.
Well, it's true that no matter what generalization you're going to make, that men are more likely to go into the sciences than women, that you can cite hundreds of women who have had great success in the sciences, for example. But I think that there's also percentages involved in things. And I'm assuming that that's what you're talking about here, that if you take polls or if you ask women what they want, they are more likely in mm-hmm. a majority are more likely to say this rather than that, and men are likely to say something else.
I think we have to recognize this, that what data has showed us here is, first of all, we are celebrating this year the 50th anniversary of the birth control pill, which fundamentally changed the relationship between sex and procreation. In the mid-1990s, we passed over, I think, another magical bridge where the overwhelming majority of wealth across the world was in the hands of people who had made it in the course of their own lifetime. In 2005, the New York Times reported that if you were a working woman in a major American city at age 30, you probably out-earned your male counterpart. You were better educated, and that while there are certainly glass ceilings out there, the fundamental relationship of women to money and women to men and women to the workforce have gone through a remarkable transformation over the past 20 years.
Maybe that's why we're seeing so many Republican women running for office this year. You don't want to get into that, Paco. Anyway, we've come. You want to say anything, or because we've come to the end of this conversation?
There is a chapter that was in this book that Simon & Schuster pulled out about women and politics, where we talk about the difference between civics and politics, and that democracy is a male sport, where you have a beginning, an end, and there's a winner and a loser, and that ultimately we may be better off as a species focusing on civics as opposed to a democratic order where we are always waiting for the next game.
Paco Underhill's latest book is What Women Want, The Global Market Turns Female Friendly. It's published by Simon & Schuster. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Up next, Fred Plotkin describes the food, wines, bakeries, olive oil distilleries, cheeses, markets, and restaurants that make Italy a culinary treasure. This is WNYC and WNYC.org. We're also available as a podcast.